WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. It's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Well, it is another Monday. Time for Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. And I will be in charge of entertaining you and informing you for the next 1 hour and 44 minutes. We have a great show lined up for you. Before we get into some of the guests, Mr. Richard Rosen, proud sponsor, McGuigan's Pub, is going to be my co-host, Mr. Rosen. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
And thank you for... Bringing some snacks to at least you smell it in the air. It's fantastic. Some I believe Whitman samplers are here.
I feel guilty if I show up without food.
What is that?
I think because you've always threatened me, but no, just kidding.
Only if you don't bring pizza.
Yeah,
the famed pizza. But we are going to talk a little bit about McGuigan's Pub.
Good.
Things are happening. Let's not forget it is that time of year. The annual road race.
Yes.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Maybe we'll tease a little bit about your bee show. Your second season of the Buzz Around Bees.
The Buzz Around Bees starts soon.
Starting soon, so be careful. It'll be coming to a community local television station near you.
Be careful. Was that a pun? No, yes. Pun intended?
Yes. We're full of puns tonight. So Richard is going to be not only a co-host asking questions, but... We'll kind of get a little insight, the latest with McGuigan's Pub, located in downtown Whitman. 6:20 after we check in with Ben to find out what's happening out on the roadways. State Representative Josh Cutler in for the State House report. It's his turn to chat with us. Timely, I might add, because a couple of things happening. A good friend of his leaving the State House. That's none other than Jim Cantwell. Going from being a state rep to being the guy who'll be doing, overseeing the state movements of U.S. Senator Ed Markey. So we'll talk with him about that. We'll talk with him about the release. I believe the House, Senate, and Ways Committee will be releasing the fiscal 19 budget, the House version of the budget. We'll talk with him about that. Then at 6:40, we have old friend... Plymouth Selectman and State Rep candidate John Mahoney will be in studio. We'll chat with John about ramping up his campaign for State Rep, see how things are going in America's hometown. Check in with John. John, will also stay for a second segment as we're going to talk a little bit about more about adult recreational marijuana. Usually the week between... You know, the shows, I try to line up guests and try to put together good segments. We have Whitman Police Chief Scott Benton coming in, as well as, like I said, John Mahoney will be here. These are communities, I believe, that are on different sides of the spectrum when it comes to allowing the sales of recreational marijuana. Whitman has passed a ban. Think that Plymouth, we'll find out from John, Plymouth may actually be looking to do zoning on it. We'll find out from John, because I don't have that in front of me at the moment. And then we'll speak with Richard. As I said, we'll chat with him about McGuigan's, and then we'll close things out with numismatist Richard Hand, as National Coin Week is just a couple of days away.
I was born and raised in Massachusetts, and one of my favorite Masshole expressions is wicked. It's like heavy wall bangers. 10, 14, 19, male and female, 90 degree and 45 degree for $9.99. Wicked. Another favorite expression is pissa. Got oil? Brennan's has variable voltage batteries for $14.99. Pissa. Let's put the two together and make it a noun. There goes the guy passing everybody on the right. Morning rush hour traffic. Oh, aren't you a wicked pissa guy? Brennan's Smoke Shop. Customers must be wicked pissa and have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we returned for the first segment of Monday Night Talk. And we welcome on for our first guest, State Representative Josh Cutler. Josh, I'm glad we get to do a dress rehearsal earlier today. So some of the topics are going to be very, very familiar to you.
I'm so happy to get my Kevin time today.
And you know what? It came at
And Richard as well.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Richard's kind of disappointed because he actually brought extra Whitman samplers for you to sample.
Oh, you know, normally I love to come in studio. I actually have some Boy Scouts from local troop in Hanson that are coming to visit me just after this, so I have to stay here in Hanson, but otherwise I would be delighted to have to sample some samplers.
And which troop are they from?
Troop 68 in Hanson.
Excellent. Well, tell them that we were asking for them, and we'll start things by talking a little bit about, well, it's that time of year, and we're just a couple of days away from the House releasing their version of the budget. What are you anticipating?
Yeah, so this Wednesday, the House Ways and Means will be releasing its version of the budget. As you know, earlier in the year, the governor released his budget. Now it's the House's turn. So the House Ways and Means budget is sort of the baseline from which we build on. And then all of our colleagues will have an opportunity to weigh in by filing amendments, you know, both things of a local nature. Like, for instance, we'll be pushing for funding for Talking Information Center, for instance. Certainly all of us will be advocating for different priorities in our districts, but also items that are of a broader concern. Chapter 78, the school aid for our cities and towns, funding for environmental programs, public safety, you know, you name it. We'll be trying to do the best we can with, you know, finite resources to do the best we can for our communities.
How have the revenues looked over the past 9 months, and how does that figure into the revenue projections going into the next fiscal year?
Yeah, so good news on that front, Kevin. Last year was a bit of a challenging year from a revenue point of view, with revenues not always meeting our benchmarks. But this fiscal year has been a bit of a different story so far. We're between $800 and $900 million above benchmarks, in other words, our projections. Although, you know, built into that is some caution just because of some of the changes at the federal level. You know, we may be seeing some people paying their taxes ahead of time, which could influence that. But nonetheless, much rather be on this side of the equation than the other. So it is welcome news, although we're going to, again, keep an eye on it as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year.
And probably one of the couple of things that might be part of the conversation is ballot questions we'll see this November, yes?
Yeah, it's going to be a busy fall election season. In addition to all the races locally, plus governor's race, we're going to have a number of ballot questions, probably several. One of them is likely to be the Fair Share Amendment, so-called millionaire's tax.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, Kevin, that's going to be tough on you, I know. But, you know, you'll survive.
I will.
And also on the other side, the sales tax is a ballot question, and potentially cut the sales tax from 6.25 down to 5%. So one would increase revenue, one would decrease revenue, and obviously how those two ballot questions swing, whether they are both passed or one not the other or neither, could have a, you know, pretty significant impact on the bottom line here in the state budget. So we'll be watching those closely, obviously.
I think Richard has the next question.
So, Josh,
McGuigan's?
McGuigan's. Well, no, can talk at McGuigan's.
A fine local establishment, I must say.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you'll have to
not
come
in
to
my district, but very close, so we still love it.
It's close.
You'll have to tune in later, Representative, for the news in regards to, in addition, Or a neighboring addition in regards to McGuigan's Pub in Richard. So stay tuned.
That's what they call it, a tease. That's very good, Kevin.
Yes.
A tease. All right, so I have a really, really important question. Actually have two. One is on the... One happens to do with the Charlie Mann Bridge. Tell me about the Charlie Mann Bridge. Charlie, you know, was a good old... I mean, he was a friend of mine for 35 years. And I love the guy. He was great. I used to golf with him frequently. So tell me
I've
about the bridge.
I've heard he's a great golfer.
He was a good golfer.
So Representative Charles Mann was a predecessor of mine a couple times ago, so going back a little ways. He passed away just within the last 2 years, mm-hmm. and he was folks around here may realize, know him better as a Hanson Town moderator, because he was a town moderator for a number of years, over 20 years. And so because we wanted to kind of find a way to honor his service to our community, to our country, to the whole region, and he was the kind of person, as you said, you know, Republican, but someone who worked across party lines and tried to sort of reach out in a very open way. So there's a bridge in the town of Hanson. Actually, is very appropriately, it's a bridge between the town of Hanson and the town of Hanover, and we are seeking to dedicate that bridge to the memory of Representative Mann. Pleased to report that both the Hanson and the Hanover boards of selectmen have voted to support this effort, and the bill that we filed along with my colleagues here on the South Shore was recently approved by the House of Representatives, and so now we'll move over to the Senate. So we're getting much closer to seeing that pass and being able to honor Representative Mann.
You know, that's great. He really was a great guy, and he was one of those rare people that worked very well across both sides of the aisle.
He
got a lot done in your district. Back.
Yeah, he did. No, he was someone I very much admired, and even though in my first campaign he campaigned against me, but you know what? I respected him and what he did, and so this is, I felt strongly that it was important to try to recognize that. I think public service should be embraced and thanked in all its forms.
So, after you first got elected, I had the opportunity to be in the State House, and I saw your office. So I guess my question is...
My first office? Yeah. The cubicle?
So it was a closet. I'd like you to just tell me, or I'm hoping that you're going to tell me that you have a new office, that you moved upstairs out of the basement closet, and you have a nice suite or something.
So not a suite, I wouldn't say. I have a much nicer office. You know, space is at a premium at the State House, but when you're in your first term, you kind of get put as part of the freshman Knox, I guess, put in a... for better or for worse, you know, a cubicle. And that was my experience in my first term, and since then now I'm in my third term, so I've slowly gotten better offices, although, you know, that's not the important part, but it is nice to have a little bit of elbow room. And Kevin's going to come up and visit us soon at the State House for another show soon, and he'll get a chance to see it firsthand. But I do have two nice windows I can look at over the side of Ashburton, and it's a nice area. So
that's good to hear.
And when he talks about show, we're talking about a cable show that he does on a regular basis. And last June, we actually did. We brought cameras up to the representative's plush office, I might add. He's got a sizable office that we were able to... It was like a mini studio for us where we set up three cameras. His staff was phenomenal. Well, we are going back up June or July to shoot another episode. You actually can watch it at home, Richard. It's called Crosstalk, the 6th Plymouth District Edition.
I actually have watched that before.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's on the same channel that the Buzz Around Bees is on, if I remember.
Yes. If we need to promote you a little bit more, yes.
Okay, I just had to get that
absolutely.
Richard, we'd love to have you visit anytime. If you want to come up and visit anytime, please let us know. We'd love to have visitors.
Thank you, Representative.
And that goes to the same for any listeners out there. I'd love to have folks come up to the State House.
So, you know, speaking of visitors, we should probably take a moment to discuss a little bit of a gathering up at the State House last week to say farewell to a good friend of yours, someone from the law firm of, was it Cantwell, Cutler, and Calter?
I believe it's Cutler, Cantwell, and Calter.
Okay.
Now it's just Cutler and Calter, unfortunately.
At least for the moment, yes.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, no, I'm joking around, but our good friend and colleague, Representative Jim Cantwell from Marshfield, obviously the home of WATD, gave his farewell address just last week. He's moving on to be state director for Senator Ed Markey, which is a great position for him to be able to kind of influence policy on a statewide level. But, you know, we certainly are going to miss him at the House of Representatives. He's been a great friend of mine. As Jim likes to joke, I actually introduced his wife I introduced him to his wife on a blind date over 20-plus years ago. So we've been friends for a long time, and he's been a great ally for the South Shore and for Talking Information Center and for Seawalls and for so many different issues. So he certainly will be missed. And we'll miss his terrible sense of humor as well.
But again, a big advocate for so many different things,
so
as you mentioned, Seawalls and a lot of things that are in district fight against for the opioid epidemic that we're still experiencing.
Absolutely, and it's a great segue because I think my scouts are just arriving, and one of the things we wanted to talk about tonight, or that they wanted to talk about, was the opiate crisis and what's going on. And Representative Cantwell just led and completed a commission called the Promote Prevent Commission, which was all about finding evidence-based ways to tackle substance abuse from a prevention point of view. You know, we spend so much of our focus is on, you know, sort of the triaging, the emergency situation, but, you know, we want to make sure we're also spending resources downstream, sort of up preventing the problem from before it gets to that stage. So promoting prevention efforts is sort of the name of the game. And so Jim chaired this special commission that met over the last year and a half, and they just issued their report literally just days ago. We're currently digesting that and hoping that some good things will come out of that. So that's a nice segue for me, and a nice legacy for Representative Cantwell.
Absolutely, and kind of staying on the whole Seawall area, you and I discussed prior to coming on air here today in regards to an environmental bond bill. Can you give us the details of that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we had some terrible storms this past winter and, you know, trees down everywhere. You can still see them as you drive around the South Shore. In one of my communities in Duxbury, we got particularly hard hit with damage to our coastal infrastructure. In particular, some neighborhoods lost part of their seawalls down by Cable Hill and Ocean Road North in that particular area of Duxbury. And so, you know, it's a significant cost to try to replace those seawalls. And the town is currently in that process. We had FEMA down to take a look at the seawall and did a tour. And the only good news, I guess, is that the damage is significant enough that it's very likely that we'll qualify for some federal relief. But there's still going to be a hefty price tag to pay for at the town level to pay the difference. And so we're trying to find ways to help out through the state. And one of those ways is potentially could be the environmental bond bill, which Governor Baker just filed just recently, and actually just had a hearing this past week. And we put in a request for funding for Duxbury seawalls through that particular bond bill. So we'll be following that closely. There's also a state seawall and dam repair fund that actually Representative Cantwell had a major hand in getting off the ground. And so we'll be looking for funds there too, and wherever else we can find it. You know, borrowing money from you, Kevin. Whatever we, you know, scraping coins from your car. You know, whatever it takes.
You're kind. Again, we're speaking with State Representative Josh Cutler. He is our guest for the State House Report segment as we touch upon a number of different things. So, what are some of the other things you're going to do with the Scouts tonight?
So I think they have a badge that they need to do that is focused today on substance abuse issues. But generally speaking, and we have Scouts, I find that they have tremendously, you know, great questions. I had some Cub Scouts in a couple weeks ago, and boy, they asked some questions about climate change, and they were so on the ball. So I've always been impressed. But a lot of times we'll talk about, you know, sort of the rights and responsibilities of citizenship. And the different constitutional amendments and the Bill of Rights and all those great things.
See, I thought you were trying to wow them with maybe a presentation on the origin of the town of Hanson, the name.
Yeah, you know, I'm saving that for for different audiences. But yes, no, that's been my other project lately is working on the history of the town of Hanson, which I am proud to represent. And there's a quite colorful guy named Alexander Hanson, who the town was named after. He's a man after my own heart. He was a former newspaper editor turned politician. But hopefully my fate will not be the same as his, as he was had his office burned down by the mob, and he was beaten to within an inch of his life.
Wow.
And hoping that doesn't happen to me. But otherwise, it's a fascinating guy, and he went on to become a United States senator. Unfortunately, died at the age of 33 as a result of the injuries that he received in this jail massacre. So had a chance to do a nice presentation to the Hanson Historical Society last week about work, and I'm hoping down the road to actually be able to publish a book on it if I have time to finish it.
That would be fantastic, because we do love having authors on here. Actually,
yes. Will you invite me on as an author as well as a
I will, actually. Teasing it, next Monday night we have Casey Sherman. You know who he is?
Oh, yeah. Sure, of course. Yeah, I think I've been on the show with him before.
Casey actually is going to be launching. He'll have a new book out next Tuesday, and this program will have an opportunity to kind of discuss it the eve of it launching.
I think I remember being on the show once for the last book, as I recall, a couple of years ago. So, yeah, that'll be exciting and a great coup for you guys here on Monday Night Talk.
Absolutely. Make sure you tune in next week at around, after 6:30.
That sounds great.
Representative, sounds we great. Want to thank you again for joining us, and please stay in touch as you always do.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate the chance to be on.
Okay, there he is, State Representative Josh Cutler, representing the 6th Plymouth District. And if you don't know what that is, it's actually Pembroke, Hanson, and Duxbury. That's the district that he represents. What we're going to do right now is we're going to step aside just for a moment. Our next guest is warming up in the bullpen. He'll be driven out by the Red Sox cart to the mound, and we'll chat with Plymouth Selectman John Mahoney in just a moment here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Love this time of year. This is the time of year that it's an opportunity to share information with the listeners here on the South Shore, whether it's the folks up in Quincy and Braintree, folks over as far west as Brockton and Stoughton, Whitman, Bridgewater, and even as far south as Wareham and the town of Plymouth. Joining us is Plymouth Selectman John Mahoney. Mr. Mahoney, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Yep. Kevin, good evening. Good to be here.
We're going to have you on more than just like to kind of talk about an announcement or that you're running for office. Because I said to you on when we talked.
Yes.
That you're like a no-nonsense kind of a guy. You're a straightforward kind of a guy who can be passionate about stuff. And that passion, you can hear it. It exudes when you talk about it.
Thank you, Kevin.
So one of these times...
I'm always disappointed. Every 2 or 3 years I come up here, that's the only time I see Christine James.
Really?
We're having the selectman forums for re-election.
Yes.
Other than that, I don't see her.
Well, okay. Do you want us to send her instead of Charlie from now on? Charles Matheson?
Yes, I know. Well, I actually, Mr. Matheson, we do see on a fairly regular basis.
Look, you ask and ye shall receive. Okay. Christine James, of course, popping in into the Air Conference studio to say hello. Thank you very much, Christine.
Hi, Christine. Good to see you.
I think she said back, good to see you as well.
I can
at least read lips for at least a sentence. That's about it. So you're throwing your hat into the ring for state rep?
Absolutely.
Why?
Well,
and this isn't your first time.
It's not the first time. It's the second time, Kevin. I ran in the November of 16 race. And I came within 400 votes out of 23,000, basically 800. I was the closest race in the state. And I believe that the presidential ticket on both sides went against me. Mm. That carried the day for the incumbent. And we're back to tackle it again.
Why do I think you ran more than once for state rep?
Because I don't think you can technically call the 2014 write-in race a...
There you have it.
So
there you have
what happened
it.
Was, and you want to know why people get turned off by government today, it's taking 230 qualified Americans up to Beacon Hill. I'm sorry, not Beacon Hill, up to Ashburton Place to the State Elections Division, one of which was the Senate president at the time, and being told that those people don't qualify. So there's a whole long story there. I thought it was a lot of bunk. I wasn't defeated. We ran a write-in campaign in the primary. And we got 35% of the vote in the primary in 14. I came back in 16. Obviously, we got our name on the ballot. I won the primary in 16 by 45 percentage points. And we went into the November of 16 election. There's 11 precincts. So the first Plymouth district, you were just defining Josh's district, how it cuts through Duxbury, Pembroke, and Hanson.
Yes, sir.
The first Plymouth district is 11 out of the 15 precincts in Plymouth. And the incumbent won six of them, and I won five. And his six beat my five by 402.
Wow.
So we're back in the game, and we're going to work even harder than this summer, summer of 18, than we did in 2016.
Richard, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'm just curious. I have a couple of questions. how long have you been a selectman?
So I came back in 17, and basically 6 months after the defeat in November of 16 for state rep, I signed up again to run for my fourth term on the Plymouth Board of Selectmen. It was a pretty crowded field in May of 17. There were some pretty talented people in that field. And, I'm sorry, the other incumbent had walked away. So it was myself in an open seat. Top two vote getters got a seat. There were six people, 8,000 people voted, and I was fortunate enough to top the ticket.
Doesn't Plymouth have a town meeting form of government?
They have, not only do they have a town meeting form of government, but they have an elected town meeting form of government. So it's not an open town meeting. So in typically these smaller communities, you're 18, you're a registered voter, you're a resident of that particular community, you can go and vote. So in Plymouth, it's a little bit different. They've been doing this, I believe, since the 50s, where each precinct has 9 representatives. So you've got 15 precincts, you've got 9 representatives, a body of 135. And every year, 3 people from each of the 15 precincts is up for re-election for a 3-year term.
Interesting. So what district, what part of Plymouth does the district represent that you're running for? Like North Plymouth, South Plymouth?
So if you look at a map of Plymouth, Massachusetts, yeah. Precinct 1 is the very north district. And then if you go west around the top border, you get the Precinct 11, which is the airport, and Precinct 13, which is West Elementary. Those 3 precincts go with Tom Calter, the state representative who resides in Kingston. Now, if you look at a map and look at the southwestern corner of the community, South Elementary, Precinct 9, that goes with Representative Randy Hunt, who is out of Sandwich. So it's basically those 11 precincts in between. It's about 70% of the community.
And who is the current rep that you're running for the seat?
Matthew Muratori.
Interesting. My daughter is a school teacher in Plymouth. She teaches at the Cold Spring School. And I know that she watched town meeting on Saturday because I had actually heard it on the radio.
I'm wondering if my son had your daughter. What's your first name?
Her first name is Rebecca.
How long has she been there?
8 years.
I think
she did take a year off, and she taught in she took a year off.
Folks, we have just connected the dots somehow.
Oh, my son's now up at PCIS, which is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade.
Yeah, so
he spent 5 years at Cold Spring, and I believe he might have had your daughter.
Yeah, he probably did.
Small world.
I'm going to tell you something. She's the kind of kid, and I'm not just saying this because it's my daughter. She's the kind of kid that you want your kid to have as a teacher.
Why?
She's just a devoted, amazing teacher. It's just incredible the things that she comes up with. But anyway, let's...
I shut my phone off. I text her, his mother immediately to confirm that, but I can't.
No, but you guys had a town meeting on Saturday, I think.
Correct.
And how often do they have town meeting?
You have a town meeting basically twice a year. In April, the April town meeting is the big one because you're doing all the majority of the budgetary issues. You come back in October, fall town meeting, which in theory is the quote-unquote fill in the blanks. And then in particular, if you ever want to call an emergency town meeting for something, the Board of Selectmen can do that. We did that in December. It was a bit contentious. I didn't support it, Richard. We did have a special town meeting back in December. There was only two articles. One was approved and the other one was not. And then the last special town meeting before that, I believe, was in 08.
I got to ask, is the one that was in December, did that have anything to do with what had to be done before April 1st regarding adult recreational marijuana? Or was it something totally different?
Was it more financial? No, it was more of two infrastructure issues.
Okay.
One got the thumbs up and one didn't.
Okay. It was just a curious question because I know the town of Whitman, and again, we got coming up at 7 o'clock, Whitman Police Chief Scott Benton will be joining us. Whitman had two, before April 1st, they had to have the two, because that town had voted for marijuana. They wanted the adult recreational marijuana.
Correct.
But the officials in town, okay, so do they not want it? Was it a matter of a criminal element you wanted to eliminate, or did you want to actually generate revenue from it? Not that we're getting prematurely into the conversation, but just to kind of give folks a little bit of a little bit of an insight. So what the elected officials in Whitman wanted to do was clarify: do you want it to be just it's not going to be something that will be on somebody's criminal record, or do you want to see the town generate revenue? And of course, they had to do two different zoning prohibitive bylaws. Both of those had passed, and then you had to have a special election. So when you had mentioned that, that's why I was asking.
Yeah, I'll stick around after 7 o'clock, Kevin. I can fill in some of the gaps in plan.
Oh, no, that's the idea, is for you and Scott to be here, and I'm looking forward to it. How have the issues changed since 2 years ago?
To me, they really haven't. Excuse me. So if you had asked me 5 to 10 years ago, Kevin, what was the biggest issue, especially in the area of southeastern Massachusetts? I would have told you flat out it's that power plant that resides down on the coast in Manomet.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last few years, this opioid issue is on par with how important, safe decommissioning of the plant is. Those two are neck and neck. And that was probably, I could say that was the same thing 2 years ago. You look at the country, you look at the state, you look at the town of Plymouth, the infrastructure across the country is deplorable. If Dwight Eisenhower was here today, he'd be embarrassed. If you look at post-World War II and what occurred in the 50s during his 8 years of his presidency and, the highways, it's just in tatters, and that's the case in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So we've got a 400th anniversary coming up. It's about infrastructure, certainly at the state level. And I haven't been down at the MBTA for, 6 to 10 months, but routinely I would take the red line into town, to go to work. You talk about a modern transportation system, but it's using 1950s, 60s, and early 70s technology. That's unacceptable. So I would peg the infrastructure needs at the Commonwealth of Massachusetts today at basically at least $100 billion, $10 billion of which is down at the MBTA.
Mm.
And certainly, in my opinion, the MBTA is an entity that is certainly deserving of a federal subsidy. But you're just patching that. That system down there is being patched with duct tape and Band-Aids.
When you look at we're so many years removed from the big dig. Remember that? The big dig that was going to cost us, about $2 to $4 billion and has since ballooned to maybe $20 billion, depending on where the interest lies. And we know that under the Patrick administration, that part of that debt got moved over into the transportation. I don't know if it was the DOT or if it was the MBTA.
So both parties are at fault here.
I think
your current governor, back in the 90s, when he was involved in the Weld administration, there were certain decisions where we pushed things off to the future. Because there's a magical place in the future, Kevin, where we all know everything is either less expensive or free.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
That administration back then also used to tell us that it was on time and on budget.
Which
I think
one,
the budget...
Which
no,
one now?
The, I think the Weld the well administration used to tell us it was on time and on budget. And I believe Salucci told us that as well.
But again, so the idea here is that this has been a problem that's been looming large, and instead of trying to pare down the debt that the MBTA has and try to find a way to make it affordable and be able to not only maintain the people that you have there, eliminate the redundancies because they had numerous departments, but how can you spend money when you're still paying off a debt that has been incurred?
Right. And then the other thing is, with respect to generator revenue, there's only so high that you can take the fares to ride in that system. Mm. And you get to a point of diminishing returns, and people are going to say, you know what? I can no longer afford to get on this subway or this train and take it. I'm going to have to drive. And now you're creating another problem where you're putting tens of thousands more cars onto the highway, and where are they all parking when they get into the city? So where's that delicate balance? So that's why I would tell you it's one of the few areas in the state of Massachusetts that certainly deserves a federal subsidy. But that federal subsidy should be coming in the form of capital investment, which is non-existent.
There's no chance of getting that.
Ben, do you have a question? My producer Ben has a question in regards to the MBTA.
I just wanted to reiterate that what you were just saying, sir. As someone who actually works at Fenway Park from time to time, parking is a nightmare. You have to be not only skilled but lucky to find a place to actually leave your car for more than 2 hours, because you do have to move it every 2 hours on top of that, which takes away from work and everything else. So I absolutely agree with you that something needs to be done, and Band-Aids are no longer going to fix that.
Should I tell you, I take my son into a Sox game, or a couple of years ago, we went into the Garden for Imagine Dragons, and, you know, we go into Quincy Adams. I pocket Quincy Adams. We'll take the T in.
As do I. I'll go to Quincy Adams or Braintree. Any way I can to not have to find, you know, because when you get into the city, you know it's not cheap.
Well, now
especially if you go to a Sox game.
Now you're paying $40 to park.
If you're lucky. Right. It might be close to $100.
Okay, there you go.
You know, and you have to hope that however you're parked, it's not like going to the South Shore Circus. If you're in the middle, we have to wait till everybody else is out before you're out.
Right.
Okay, I don't know anybody who's... I love going to the South Shore Circus, but I'm the guy who gets there 2.5 hours early, so I'm at least one of the first couple of cars out of there
right. When
the show's over. I'm not there, you know, having cocktails because 2 hours later, everybody else decided to leave the parking lot, so to speak. What other issues are there besides the MBTA? And again, whether the issues that are loom larger regarding the Commonwealth or your district in general?
Well, the district in general, obviously, I mean, we could spend hours here, Kevin.
Oh, I know.
This plant is going to be safely decommissioned and brought offline.
That's next year, right?
That's next year. Mm-hmm. I tell Congressman Keating all the time that, you know, once again, in his district, which in pretty much the South Shore and the entire Cape Cod, obviously, we're always having conversations about the economy and jobs, okay? But underneath that, it's this plant and it's the opioid crisis. So right now, the plant is scheduled to go offline on Memorial Day weekend of 19. My problem is that we haven't learned our lessons of the past. There was a couple of comments Saturday at the from town meeting members up at the microphone with respect to what's going on about the closure of the plant. Well, you know, I've said this to you before, Kevin. The plant revenue stream was not economic development. The town hit a $1 to $2 billion scratch ticket. So since 72, if you convert those payments at 3% for inflation into present value dollars, you're over $1 billion. We have nothing to show for it. So at some point in time, you've got to change your behavior. So the town of Plymouth has done that. So 5 to 6 years ago, we created a nuclear plant closure mitigation fund. We deposited on Saturday, I think the town meeting gave the green light for $814,000 to go into that. So finally, the board brought something to town meeting about 6 years ago. It wasn't a question of if this plant was closing. It was just a question of when. So now we have this fund that has, as of July 1st, will have $5.8 to $6 million in it. And now you've positioned the community to deal from a position of strength. So when that plant closes, you can respond in various ways and not have to ask yourself, where's the money coming from? And going back to town meeting and raising property taxes. So that's one way in which we've changed our behavior. And then the second way, and on a financial basis, this is 10 to 15 times greater than what I just mentioned to you. We just constructed and did the ribbon cutting on a new town hall back in November or December. And we earmarked the meals tax option that we got from the legislature back in 08 or 2010 for this construction. So this is a $30 million investment in new construction of a 61,000 square foot new town hall. We went out to bond last spring. It's a 30-year note of $1.79 million a year. The meals tax in its entirety over the 30 years is going to pay for this infrastructure. No property taxes. So, and then on top of that, 40 to 60% of that revenue, Kevin, and we've got to do a better job of dialing into that number and seeing exactly what this actual figure is. But the experts are telling us it's 40 to 60% of that tax is coming from people that don't live in Plymouth, Massachusetts, or the U.S. of A. So they're coming to town, they're dining in a restaurant, it's a $100 tab, there's an extra 75 cents on top, and we pass the home rule petition or a special act that says government can't move that money around because government has a habit of stealing from Peter to pay Paul. So we have a piece of legislation that says that that money can only be used to pay for that town hall. So your town manager and the chairman of the Board of Selectmen have had discussions with White House representatives and certainly Congressman Keating, who was at the ribbon cutting, knows. I would tell you, Kevin, that today there's probably not a better example of a community in New England of investing in infrastructure in a creative way. Okay? So that's how it's done. That's how it should be continued to be done. And the discussions with Congressman Keating, and when you talk about your town manager sitting in on conference calls with respect to White House representatives, we've set the bar high in Plymouth as far as the economic development of our harbor and our waterfront. We want to dredge the harbor. So at this stage of the game, you've got these small cruise ships who have 100 to 150 passengers on them. They can't come into Plymouth Harbor.
It's not deep enough.
It's not deep enough. If you dredge the harbor, and the ticket price on that right now is approximately $13 million, they will be able to come in 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Now you have a small little cruise luxury liner coming in, 100 to 150 people. They dock in Plymouth. They're here for one, two, three nights. Those people are going to disembark. They're going to inject millions of dollars into your economy. Okay? They're going to go to the Forefathers Monument, the Rock, the boat. You get it. The Plantation, the Pilgrim Hall Museum. They're going to dine. They're going to spend more money. So that's what you want. So right now, Congressman Keating understands, and we're referencing this with obviously federal officials, that we're willing to see creative ways to fund infrastructure investment, and we will continue to do that. And at this stage of the game, I wouldn't be surprised if within 12 to 18 months, Congressman Keating or his office is some sort of communication in saying, hey, the federal government's here. We've got a few million dollars. We're going to move forward. Let's get the Army Corps of Engineers. Let's dredge this harbor. But the problem is at this stage of the game, you could probably rely on the Commonwealth for $1.5 million, but that means the town of Plymouth is going to be on the hook for 7 to 10.
I see.
Okay? So my frustration is we need to create an infrastructure fund. You know, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, we always need, you're in a perpetual state of investing in infrastructure.
It's never ending.
Why are you in a perpetual state of relying on the raising of property taxes to pay for it? You shouldn't be. And now you have concrete proof in the town of Plymouth that you don't have to do that.
So as a state representative, if I can ask you this, what are some of the things that you will look to do, whether it's through legislation or through networking, to be able to take care of things like the harbor, like economic development? And we didn't even get to mention it, but let's not forget, you got a big anniversary coming up, America's hometown, turning 400.
There is, as far as I'm concerned, Kevin, there is no new tax at the federal, state level, town or whatever, that should ever be allowed to go into the general fund. And when people came to me probably 4 to 5 years ago and said, do you support the meals tax? It was this simple. I didn't have to hire a polling company to make 1,000 phone calls to figure out what side of the issue I have to be on. It's this simple. You're going to bury it in the general fund? I'll do everything I can to defeat it. You want to earmark it for some form of infrastructure? I'm in. Okay, now at that point in time, did I know it was going to be a new town hall? Absolutely not. But that's what it turned out to be. And I've stood next to Karen Polito, you know, second highest Republican ranking in the Commonwealth. I saw her reaction when she found out what we were getting for that. And I heard part of that discussion with Mr. Cutler earlier. I don't think Josh was in attendance, but I think about 1 or 2 months ago on a Friday, we had a press conference with Secretary Beaton came down to announce $7 to $10 million of grants for dam removal projects around the Commonwealth. Well, they gave him $1 million. So you're in a room with 10 to 12 state reps and state senators, and you know, you can see the puzzled look on their face, Kevin, when they're told that there's no property taxes involved in the paying of the debt service for that building. And you can see the wheels turning, okay? And some of them are like, hey, can we bring this back to our district? And can we have these people communicate with you to see how this is done?
Right.
So that's good government.
If folks want to find out more about your campaign, again, this isn't it for you. Of course, as you know, we have our patented WATD political forum, so you'll be in once again to talk about your campaign. How can folks find out more about your campaign for state rep?
I've got a website, obviously, out there, Kevin, www.mahoneyforstaterep.org, and we're doing a kickoff event in a couple of months, Thursday night, June 7th, at the Spire Center for the Performing Arts at 25 and a half Court Street, strategically scheduled after the local Plymouth town election, but before everybody leaves when school gets out for the summer. So it's cake, coffee, and conversation, which means we'll discuss any kind of issue you want to. If you want to come down, everyone is welcomed on Thursday, June 7th at the Spire Center for the Performing Arts, 6 to 8 p.m.
Then you're going to stay and
absolutely
hang out.
Absolutely.
Be part of the conversation on adult recreational marijuana. So stay, don't go anywhere. And you at home, you listening in the car, wherever you may be, don't go anywhere. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. When we come back, the second hour of this show. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Duct tape, oh, where is my duct tape? My window is cracked.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Glass. If only duct tape were transparent. Seriously, little cracks must become big cracks. It's a law of physics. We can fix that. Insurance pays. Call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
My window is cracked.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. The conversation continues here for the second hour later on in the program. Numismatist. Say that 10 times fast. Means it's somebody who likes coins, currency. Richard Hand will be here to talk a little bit about National Coin Week. April 15th to the 21st, special event at the Brockton Public Library. He'll talk about that. Of course, Richard Rosen, we'll let him talk up not only McGuigan's Pub, but the annual road race and some coming attractions for downtown Whitman. Can we talk a little bit about the lobster roll?
It's coming back soon.
That was a tease.
That was a tease. We're into tease tonight, correct?
Yes. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about adult recreational marijuana. I thought it'd be nice to have a little bit of a conversation. We were going to have a couple of police chiefs. Unfortunately, Marshfield Police Chief Phil Tavares had to go to a selectman's meeting. Couldn't make it. We were able to have Scott Benton from the town of Whitman, police chief. And I was having a conversation with Mr. Mahoney. He kind of gave me a little bit of insight as to what Plymouth was doing, which I think is somewhat similar to Marshfield. I believe that Marshfield and Plymouth, they basically approved the idea of passing, you know, allowing the sales, and I believe that's the same with Plymouth, as we said earlier.
Yes.
So you've approved the 3%, in regards to sales? Is there still a conversation going on in regards to zoning, where you'll have the retail shops, and then cultivation?
You want the whole synopsis now?
Hey, throw me here.
Okay, so in November of 16, question four, which was the legalization of marijuana, passed at the ballot in Plymouth. It passed. So you had 33,000 people vote, and it passed 52-48%. We have since taken a conservative approach to the quote-unquote zoning. It's only allowed in the two industrial parks. We went with light industrial. That went to town meeting last year. That passed, Kevin. It's only allowed in the two industrial parks, and then we restricted the amount of locations to four or less.
Okay.
Okay, and then, yes, I'm sorry, today's Monday, so 2 days ago at town meeting, and it passed, obviously, instantaneously, it was the local option tax at 3%. So that's where we currently stand. None of the retail has been approved yet. I would expect that probably in 18 that you would see one approved, if not most likely in 19.
Okay. Scott, your community for the November 2016 ballot question also approved it. As I explained earlier during John's Selectman Mahoney's segment, that Whitman, not knowing what exactly the intent of its residents was when they voted in 2016, wanted to be clear. Did you want it where it's just decriminalized, or did you also want a retail and cultivation part of this as well? And there was a December and a March special town meeting to kind of get clarity. Whitman is one of those communities that has passed a zoning, protective zoning bylaw prohibiting any sale or cultivation of adult recreational marijuana. Is that, am I correct on that?
Yeah, no retail. No retail. No retail sales, but well, this kind of came about when they were looking at having a medical marijuana grow facility, not a distribution, but a grow. And people, I don't know if it was a panic button or what, but all of a sudden it was like, what do you mean? And then it evolved into this. But yeah, the town did vote to legalize it, and then subsequently has decided, yeah, but we're not going to have retail marijuana here, which I think is a good idea.
Richard.
So, you know, you look at a town like Whitman and a town like Plymouth, and when you have one of the smallest geographic land areas as we do in Whitman, and you look at a huge town like Plymouth, you stand a much greater chance in a town like Plymouth. I know, excuse me, what the chief was talking about when we, the town was approached about doing a medical growth facility in Whitman, people were very upset, which ultimately led into the no on the recreation, and I agree, I don't think it's a great idea, but I'm going to tell you, I had the opportunity to tour the medical grow facility in Brockton. I know that the chief did, and I went over a week after the chief, and it was amazing. It was absolutely nothing like what I expected.
And you wouldn't even know.
Not in a million years would you know.
Like the name would actually throw you. You actually would think it's like a workout place.
And, you know, I'm not opposed to a medical grow facility, because you could put it anywhere and drive by it and not know what was in there. And I was just stunned at what I saw and how these things operate, because it was nothing like what I expected. But yeah, Whitman just recently voted down the
they had until April 1st to do so, or they would have to worry about what would happen in regards to folks. What are your concerns collectively? What are your concerns or your thoughts in regards to this new industry that is descending on the Commonwealth?
Well, just following up on Rich's comments, I had no problem with the medicinal. I didn't support the legalization, the recreation. But at the end of the day, we've got 40,000 registered voters in Plymouth, and 32,652 of them approved this. So was I going to put this on the ballot, Kevin, at a town election with only 6,000 people showed up? You don't get a better sampling than 32,600 at a presidential election. Mm. So as it currently stands, we have Medical Marijuana of Massachusetts is open and doing business in Plymouth. They're tucked back in the industrial park. I've toured this facility multiple times. I believe all, certainly the town manager, and I'm pretty confident the other four board of selectmen members have been there. And what Rich was saying, you wouldn't know. Okay, so you've got the state-of-the-art security. You go into this building, and it's tucked in the back, and, you know, bordering it on one side is Route 3. And, you know, they're to the point where they're selling medicinal, and they're growing. So we've approved that. We've also approved one more for growing only. And that's another competitor, which is also in the same industrial park. They are currently under construction, but I don't know what their date is yet for completion of the construction and then going into the growing. But I have personally no problem with the medicinal. But I wasn't going to throw out a vote on almost 33,000 people and take that stance. So what did we do? We had certain controls in place. We went to town meeting. We advocated for the strongest or quote-unquote most conservative location where we restricted it to the two industrial parks, and we restricted it no more than four. So, you know, we'll see where that takes us.
Scott?
Well, so obviously from our perspective, a lot of things that concerns that we have are one. So we all know alcohol. We use a breath test machine to determine whether you're how intoxicated and what your level is. There is really no way to determine how under the influence what level they are if they're using marijuana, which medically I totally agree with. I don't have an issue with it. I think that, you know, if you're suffering from some sort of a medical condition and your symptoms can be relieved, then by all means, you know, I don't see the issue there. I think when it comes to communities, like one thing, I just happened to print this off. So 420 is the big, you know, for those who love their marijuana and their hemp, that's the day, man. And one of the things says right here, the seven best things to do on 420, and one of them is take a road trip to a weed-legal city. So if you just modify that down to it's to a weed-legal community where I can purchase the stuff, and I think that's why a small town like Whitman that really doesn't have a place, as you know, Mr. Rosen said, you don't have a place where you can just kind of off the beaten path go here. We're small, so I don't think... As communities eliminate this, the communities that are going to get this traffic are the ones, obviously, that, and it's going to be considerable. And I think Whitman, if you're in the middle and you're surrounded by communities that are shutting it down, they're going to come right to you geographically. So the more that shut it down, you know, the more they move out. I did think it was kind of, looking at some things, so 12%, back in 1969, 12% of our population said back then, yeah, we should legalize it. And now it's up to 64% today. So certainly, you know, is it out there? Is it going to be there? You know, it is. I mean, the old argument of alcohol versus marijuana, you hear it all the time. I think we all can agree we have problems with alcohol, right? Alcoholics Anonymous. The fallout from this disease, right? And now we're going to bring another one in. Like, they can say, yeah, the guy that, you know, has six joints versus six beers is going to be much nicer, but it's still going to be a problem. So now we're going to have, I don't know, Marijuana Anonymous, I guess. I don't know. But I just see there's concerns with the recreational end of it that I have. As a police chief, and I know a lot of other chiefs have. And then, too, don't forget the kind of the elephant in the room here is the federal government saying, hey, you know what? It's still illegal for us, so we don't know what we're going to do yet. And I know that the attorney general is, the federal government's the federal government, so if they come down, I don't know what'll happen. But
okay, so what if WHD sponsors actually is calling in, if you don't mind, as long as Jeffrey can be short. Jeffrey Yelenesian is actually on the line. Jeffrey, you don't mind me saying your last name, do you?
You did a great job, Kevin. That was awesome. Yelenesian.
Okay. So if you could quickly, because you're going to put something in perspective here.
I thought I heard somebody say that they thought giving up the 3% on retail marijuana was a good idea. And I'm going to tell you why that's so far from the truth, that it's not a good idea, because you go to town meetings and they do nothing but sit there and go, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for that? How are we going to pay for this? But then somebody's going to sit there and say, leaving 3% of recreational marijuana on the table is a good idea. I think it's a bad idea because these towns need the money. And the amount of money that they're going to get, and you got to understand, there's not just a 3% tax, there's also a 3% impact fee on the gross of these. So it's really 6% of recreational marijuana. Leaving that money on the table, not a good idea.
Well, if I could I clarify? Because I don't know if that was actually what was said. Was that something that was said?
No.
No, if it was, I would say, okay.
Said.
No. Okay. Well, can we clarify just so we can make sure?
No, nobody said leave it.
No. I mean, John?
John made a remark about the 3%, but he did not say leave it on the table.
Right.
No, he said he thought it was a good idea. He said he was totally for not legalizing recreational marijuana, and that he thought that banning it in Whitman was a good idea. And
You're crossing the streams here, because John is actually from Plymouth. And Scott is the police chief in Whitman. And Whitman has actually, they passed a zoning bylaw to prohibit any sale or growing of adult recreational marijuana.
And he said he thought that was a good idea. And I'm saying that I think it's a bad idea. I think that leaving 3% on the table is a bad idea, and especially these towns are starving for money. I think, you know, I live in Freetown, Kevin, and the town didn't do a really good job, you know, getting the vote out, and only 200 people showed up to vote, and it got banned. The usual showed up to town meeting, and they banned it. So if there was an actual ballot, and people actually knew about it, and they went and they voted, and they knew it was time to go vote, the ban would have never passed.
Jeffrey, right? here's what I'm going to do, Jeffrey. We're going to have you in we'll do another segment on this, and you'll be one of the people we have in.
Excellent.
Okay.
But I just want to say it's leaving that money on the table or losing that 3%. It's actually 6% because the impact, the 3% impact, is a bad idea.
Okay. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye.
Yeah, there he is. Jeffrey Yelenesian, owner of Brennan Smoke Shop. You hear the commercials all the time.
I don't think that the 3% was any part of this discussion, whether it be pro or con, for or against. There was 3% mentioned. He's completely wrong.
All right. Well, let's talk about as far as the revenues. Plymouth. I mean, is it?
So let me. You want some revenues?
Please do. Yeah.
So,
because Plymouth will realize these revenues.
This is the problem, and I could speak for hours on this topic, Kevin.
We'll have to have you in too.
These communities don't have a problem with revenue. It's what they do with the revenue that creates the problem. So, if you look at medicinal marijuana of Massachusetts, which just opened up in Plymouth, we have a host community agreement with them. Okay, it's $100,000 a year for 5 years, and there's a 3% cost of inflation there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growth every year. Okay, on top of that, they're paying property taxes. Okay, $54,000 on the facility, but because they have the ability to cultivate there, they're going to double the property taxes to roughly $108,000. So before you get into the recreational, on this medicinal facility, our taxes from them this year are going to be in that $200,000 to $215,000 range. Okay? Now, that individual is just on the phone, is correct. So we passed the 3% local option on Saturday at town meeting. There's also another 3% on top of that. So the local communities, if you approve the recreational, you're getting 6%. So in theory, if we issue one of these permits and these individuals, let's just say it goes to this MMM, they do $8 million in sales. That's $60,000 for each million. So you're into that 480 range. And on top of the 220 that they're giving us for the medicinal, you're in the $700,000 a year range. Now, I've never bought into anything coming out of the state of Colorado as far as the magical hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue or whatever, it's billions
of
dollars.
Well, I think it's too early for the data for us to realize.
And the state of Massachusetts is anticipating hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
The money is only as good as what you do with it. Okay, and one of my pet peeves in being involved in local government, and it's probably the same situation in Whitman. It's just I gave you the example of $1 to $2 billion from a power plant with nothing to show for it. The auto excise tax. We transact 60,000 of these a year in Plymouth, Kevin. We take in $8.5 to $9 million a year. In theory, that taxes for roads. You know how much of that is earmarked for roads? Zero. Mm. We have $135 million worth of debt with respect to our roads. Our roads are in deplorable shape. Kind of defeats the purpose of creating a tax for roads if you don't have to put any of that tax into roads.
Okay, we get a couple of more minutes left here, not only with Plymouth Selectman John Mahoney, but also Whitman Police Chief Scott Benton, and then we're going to talk a little bit with Richard about McGuigan's Pub in just a couple of moments. I do have to ask the question, especially to you, Scott, knowing that where Whitman and a lot of the neighboring communities have opposed it, they have passed legislation, but you do have a neighbor, Brockton, who is discussing. They've already approved the 3% in regards to being able to have the recreational, having the retail and the cultivation. Any concerns as to being a pass-through, anybody who is trying to make their way to a community like a Brockton or to a Plymouth?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we bought a Brockton and we deal with spillover now. I mean, I don't think, you know, it is what it is. I mean, as far as those things are going to happen, are those things that I'm overly concerned with? No, I think... and we're doing the medical. The town's looking at the medical facility and that, and they'd get the tax revenue from that. I think, you know, like, for example, they're talking about cannabis cafes down the road and stuff like that. Do I
was
going to
ask
that
about that, yeah.
No, I don't. I just, that's, I mean, each community has the right to decide if, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is it worth the taxes for me to get that for the money? If it is, then that's your call. But I don't think for the... I grew up in Whitman, and, you know, the appeal of Whitman to me is it's a bedroom community that people, they know each other, they look out for each other, and I just think this would introduce an element down the road of a lot of people coming here to purchase in... I don't think that's what we want to do.
Before we wrap up this quick conversation, I'll ask both you Scott, and you, John. You know, you mentioned it, John, when you were talking earlier regarding the opioid epidemic. And Scott, I've had many conversations with you, especially when there was that conversation about the medical marijuana facility and the concerns of people. Looking that we're still trying to find a way to resolve the opioid epidemic, and now you're introducing this industry in. Any concerns? Is it too premature, or is it something that it's already out of the box and we have to deal with it?
Well, I mean, you look at the cannabinoid 2 stuff that's infused, like they're talking, the ABCC just put out a warning because they're talking about, like, because it's legalized, they think that they can, there's a thought there that you can infuse the alcohol with it too. And the ABCC said, no, you can't do that. You have these smoke shops that have the oil. You can't have the oil. So you look at all these things and then you look at the opioids, and one thing, you know, leads to another. Does it necessarily mean if you smoke a marijuana cigarette, you're gonna use heroin? No, but I can guarantee if you go to somebody who's using heroin, they didn't start with heroin. So, you know, I just think that, like I said, we have a lot of fallout and problems from alcoholism. And I know, you know, yeah, I know alcohol's legal if you're 21, and that's fine, this is legal now, but I think we'd be pretty naive to think that we're not gonna deal with some serious issues. Just like, it may take a while, it may be like the opioid crisis now where, you know, we're paying. Now, this has been coming, and we're not going to slow it down anytime soon. So,
okay. John.
I agree with Scott. I don't think anybody who gets into marijuana is going to necessarily jump over to the opioids. The opioid issue, Kevin, I mean, you've got to tackle that from the beginning to the end. Treatment at the later stages is the treatment and the ability to, you know, get help. But at the beginning, and I've said this for years, It's coming out of the source. These people that walk out after these surgeries or whatever it is, they're getting too much medication at the source. And these pharmaceutical companies, they don't give a damn. Mm. They're pushing numbers. They're making money. That's what it's all about. They've got to cut that down at the source and make sure that there's fewer of these things available on the street.
Well, I agree, and I'm sorry that this is such a truncated conversation, but it leads to having further conversations. You're both welcome to come back. You're both also welcome to kind of stay, especially you, Chief. I know that you could talk to me about some of the fine cuisine over at McGuigan's Pub. Of course, if you feel that you'd be biased, you feel free to, you know, just kind of sit back. Richard, we give you an opportunity. Again, thank you for being a fine sponsor of this radio program and also bringing in early on some food. What's going on? What's the newest, the latest with McGuigan's? Last time we had you here, you actually teased that there's going to be a new neighboring establishment to McGuigan's.
So we'll tease that for a few more minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
While we talk about
that thing.
While we talk about our ninth annual McGuigan's Pub 5K. And, you know, with the police chief sitting here, it's a good time for us to talk about the security for the race. But
I will say, though, he's a good runner, though, because I actually have video of the chief back in the day, and he even knows what I'm talking about, where they did a torch race. And he was one of the few. I was sitting in the back of a truck breathing in fumes as this gentleman here was running, and it was a pass the torch event.
He ran the race last year.
Yeah.
But nice this shape. Is... This is our ninth annual, believe it or not, McGuigan's Pub 5K.
Wow.
It doesn't seem possible. And, you know, we historically have 300 to 400 runners. Back in the beginning, the second year, we were part of the...
You were recognized.
We were recognized, and we had, I think, 500 or 600 runners. And so we raised, it's all for charity. Every penny that we get, we give away. And we'll be approaching $40,000 this year. We'll go over $40,000 that we will have given away. And probably half of that has gone to the Whitman Food Pantry, a lot of veterans organizations, a lot of local groups and organizations, not just in Whitman. You know, it's kind of, it's interesting if you look, because I've kept track of everybody that we've donated money to, and it's pretty interesting.
Well, let's not forget, and I mentioned Casey Sherman earlier, Casey Sherman, he and Dave Wedge writing the book about the Boston Marathon bombing. I believe that part of the funding also went towards those victims, no?
That year, the year of the bombing, we gave $4,000 to the Boston One Fund. We just thought that it was the appropriate thing to do. It's myself and my wife and daughter sit down, and the four of us figure out, you know, where we're going to go with the money. Obviously, I try to give half every year to the local food pantries. I think that's really important. So, yeah, this is the ninth year. It's going to be held on June 3rd. We have a number of great sponsors, and it's a sanctioned 5K road race. Hopefully the weather will be good. We have tremendous support locally from not only Whitman Police, who do a great job blocking off the streets for us, but also Whitman Fire. You know, the selectmen, very helpful, and we have a little block party afterwards. So that's coming up on June 3rd.
Now, if we're still teasing, I don't know if I'm able to say this, but usually we have the block party is where you might maybe home to a new establishment, no?
Well, so we won't be ready with the new restaurant that we're building.
Oh, all right. So it's one more year.
No, well, before the road race.
Okay.
I'm looking to break ground, actually, within the next few weeks. But the question did come up today of where are we going to have the block party? And I said, well, I'll speak to the chief and the selectmen and we'll just close the street. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah.
That's happened more than once. Yeah. So we are building what we're going to refer to as the patio at McGuigan's. So it's across the side street in the parking lot that we have, and it's going to be around a 3,000 square foot glass building. So the glass on the front facing Washington Street will open. It's accordion glass. The glass on the side, Leisure Parkway, will open. We'll seat around 120 people. It's going to be kind of unique for Whitman Center, for any center, actually. I know Plymouth, in downtown Plymouth, is I don't know the name of the place, but in the center there's a restaurant that the windows open up to the sidewalk. It's going to be completely different than McGuigan's Pub. There'll be nothing the same on the menu. From one place to the other. We're looking forward to it. It's been a while in the planning, and I'm hoping to break ground within the next several weeks.
You understand this is a fair, right? Because it's already tough enough when I go in to try to pick something off your menu, Now you're going to have me pick which restaurant to go into.
It's perfect.
It's not fair. It's lucky perfect. I don't live across the street at Bell Tower Place.
Well, Bell Tower Place, I heard, is a really beautiful, award-winning, renovated church.
Yeah,
in downtown.
You would know that.
Yes, I would know that.
Rich, are you? I don't know your establishment. Are you in a residential neighborhood or near it?
No, I'm actually. Well, I'm near one. I'm actually in okay, right
you
downtown.
You're referring to T-Bones down in Plymouth. You got to watch those open windows.
Right. Exactly.
And the noise. Okay?
Yeah,
just
no,
be careful.
We'll be okay.
and actually, strike that balance.
And actually, something different for Whitman is we're going to have L.A. parking for the patio at McGuigan's. I've struck a deal with, because, you know, we have a parking town parking lot across the street that we utilize. See, when we're open, most everything else in Whitman is not. And, you know, our biggest crowds are at night, and with the patio, I suspect Saturday, Sunday afternoons, and then evenings. But we've struck a deal with the Legion, Whitman Legion, to park cars there. And also, believe it or not, with the Holy Ghost Church, they have a massive parking lot, which we're going to utilize part of it. Because, again, when we're open, the church generally isn't.
Okay.
So it's going to be quite different.
See, I thought you were going to tell me that this was just until you bring forth plans for Whitman's very own, its first parking garage. Because you're going to need that.
Well, I'd like to think so, but that's not in the works, actually.
Okay. All right.
But no, it's going to be a lot of work. It's very exciting. I know you've been in the pub a number of times, and on the back wall there are the artist renditions, the architect's drawings of what it's going to look like. And a lot of the customers look at it and they're like, "Yeah, we're really going to build that here." So, it's kind of got like a lean-to roof with eight skylights and some big fans, and it's going to be kind of cool. I'm going to have that industrial look inside with maybe a polished cement bar, polished cement floor. So I'm not giving away any more secrets.
Are you still working on the menu, or is that something that?
No, we are absolutely still working on the menu. We had a meeting a couple days ago with one of our purveyors, and they have test kitchens where you get on and, you know, you give them an idea and they prepare.
They're watching a GBH, yeah.
Yeah, so we're gonna do a test kitchen, beginning of May, and it's gonna be much smaller, limited menu compared to what McGuigan's Pub has now, and then McGuigan's Pub, of course. The world-famous lobster roll is coming back pretty quick. I mean, we're still, you know, because the weather's so cold, we're still serving comfort food.
Sure.
But eventually it's going to warm up, I think. It has to, right?
Eventually.
I have to ask you, Chief, is there anything in particular at McGuigan's that you like to enjoy? Do you have a favorite?
Don't incriminate yourself.
We're talking food here.
We're talking food.
We're not talking about
the 23-ounce okay. Boots of beer.
That's 35 ounces, by the way.
I'm sorry, my friend.
Okay. What's the, you know.
So, obviously, the pizza's really good, and we, I like the beef stew.
Guinness beef stew.
Yeah. Guinness beef stew. I had that last time I was in.
Yeah, the potatoes. It's really, gosh, fantastic. Really good. Yeah, and I've had the fish and chips is good. I mean, it's good. Like you said, it's comfort food. Very good comfort food.
You know, a lot of that stuff, like the Guinness beef stew, that's homemade. I mean, that isn't bought someplace and served. And we all know that the lobster roll is one of the best you'll ever eat. And I'm not just saying that. It truly is.
Well, and I think that you have a lot of your neighbors who try to copy it, too.
Yeah.
It was kind of odd that when McGuigan's, and it's the best form of a compliment. It's when you copy somebody else. But there were a lot of restaurants in the greater Brockton area that didn't offer a lobster roll until it was something that was announced and advertised. And then before you knew it, other places were. And it's like,
And I don't know if you're aware, Social Living Magazine some months ago did an article on the 8 best pizzas on the South Shore, and we were one of them.
Really?
So after having not been there that long, it was it's really nice to have that type of a recognition because it is good. You know, and we've been there, believe it or not, Kevin, it's hard to believe. We've been there a little over 8 years. It just doesn't seem possible that we've been there that long. And I think we've become, you know, a staple in the community.
See, I think personally, and gentlemen, you're welcome to chime in because I'm sure you guys eat out from time to time. And you probably have your key set of 5 to 10 to 15 restaurants that you will frequent because of certain things, the ambiance, the food, the wait staff, maybe the barkeep, maybe just, you know what, maybe they have great entertainment on certain nights. But it's also the attention to detail, and that it's not something that's a stagnant a puddle, but it's something that's always changing. In McGuigan's Pub, I think the key, the secret to your success, is that you didn't just set up a menu and go, okay, and then the waitress is bringing out the stained menu that has been there since that. No, it's always changing. There's new things being added, things are being taken off. You're adding new things. Singo is the newest thing, I'm sure. You get the Irish Sessions. I mean, it's not like I go there all the time, but I know a couple of things about the place. And
Jesus,
I think it's the key.
There's nothing left I need to say. It's a lot of work. It's my daughter does a great job running the place.
Danielle.
And it's a lot of work, and we stay after it. I mean, if you don't, you're not going to be... Restaurants don't tend to stay around a long time. They have the highest...
turnover rate.
Of any business. Mm. And I think the statistic used to be that out of every 10, five were out of business in the first 3 years, seven in the first 5 years, and we've been there almost over eight. And we actually just had the best month we've ever had in our history, March. So it's, of course, a lot of that had to do with the fact that we had our power when nobody else did. And we had to take the phone off the hook. It was so crazy busy in there for a couple of days. But it's rewarding. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of fun.
It's funny that, you're talking about businesses, and especially when you talk about eateries. I do a local television show called On the Road. And of the 15 shows that we've done, more than half of those shows where I've gone into a place, they don't exist anymore, and I can't air them.
Right.
McGuigan's is one of the few. They still can air because you're still in business.
Yeah, it's hard. And, it's fun. I mean,
Is it?
I actually have another job. I mean, my job is not at the restaurant, as we all know. I'm the chief schmoozer.
You actually are. But it's fun to see you bouncing table to table. That's the other thing. You're going table to table, greeting your guests. You probably know 70% of the people in there, but that doesn't matter. You still go in and say hi.
You know what's funny is I was away Monday and Tuesday, and Wednesday I went in during dinner hour, and I walked in, and there are some nights that I literally don't know anybody in the dining room, which I still find amazing. Sure. And there are other nights that I know everybody. So Wednesday night I walked in, and I started at one end of the dining room, and I think that I actually talked to every person in the dining room as I made my way around over to the bar, and I walked around and I said to my daughter, officially I've just talked to everybody in the dining room. I mean, but you know what? It's a small town, and people like to see the owner. And it's important.
If they want to find out more specials and all, what website is?
www.mcguigan'spub.com, mcguigans.pub.com.
And folks, he is on social media. He's more active on Instagram, on Facebook, and Twitter, so check him out. Gentlemen, I thank you all for being here and being a part of the show this evening. One more segment to go in the books. We're going to step aside for just a moment when we come back. National Coin Week here on Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Since Sputnik, so much equipment has been launched into space that no agency can keep track of it. What goes up must come down. Most frightening example being the Russian reactor with 66 pounds of enriched uranium that crashed on top of Canada back in 78. But relax, most space junk burns up. Notable exceptions being garbage jettisoned by orbiting space stations. That rubbish is all headed our way, and some frozen space debris will hit us. As yet, no person has been struck by flaming space garbage. But if it should happen to you, for instance, while you're pulling into your driveway, Well, immediately notify the National Enquirer. And if the heat cracked your windshield, you're in luck.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. We come to your work or home, and we fix your windshield. Your insurance covers it. We're Tiny & Sons. My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
As we cruise into the final segment of Monday Night Talk, this is usually the fun segment, the informative segment, segment that we can give you details, authors, maybe we'll play, have some music. Coming up in a couple of weeks, just to tease it, working on having Marion Ross, Mrs. C. Folks who remember that late 1970s, early 80s TV sitcom, Happy Days. We'll have Marion Ross kind of giving details of her book. But we're a little bit more local with this segment tonight. We have a good friend, Richard Hand. Richard is a numismatist. And Richard, we have Richard on a regular basis to talk about the celebration of National Coin Week. And Richard goes out of his way, and he's going on 11 years of doing this, where he actually puts together a program. He actually has something that he does at the Brockton Public Library, the main library at 304 Main Street. Of course, National Coin Week is April 15th to the 21st, so that's basically next week. So, Richard is here in a timely manner. We actually would have had Richard in on the 16th, but the problem is I believe we're going to be having some political forums that we'll be doing on this program. So, Richard is here today to chat about that. Richard, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
Love having you here. Love having, again, and Richard is a numismatist, and he loves talking about National Coin Week. And a lot of times it isn't necessarily just coins. There are a lot of times that his presentations and his guests that he invites to be a part of these will talk about currency in general. And so that's what's fun about that. Talk to us about the upcoming event that you're going to be doing at the Brockton Main Library, the main branch, 304 Main Street, Saturday, the 21st of April at 1 p.m.
All right, Kevin. So the American Numismatic Association since 1924 has been doing National Coin Week to try to spread the knowledge of coin collecting, metals, paper currency, certificates, documents. So they always give us a task every year to kind of do a theme off of. And this year is connecting cultures from many, one. Building bridges and promoting unity across borders. So I have a guest speaker.
Wait. Do these borders have walls?
Well, maybe. You know, you keep never going. Know what might one of my guest speakers who's going to be coming.
I'm being fresh. I apologize.
I know you are. I know you are, but I think it's very important to have borders.
Yep.
But I have a guest speaker, Dave Plenty, coming in. He's going to do a PowerPoint, Faces of Bridge Builders, Making a World a Better Place, and I believe he's putting a PowerPoint together.
Nice.
With probably some World Bank notes, maybe with Madame Curie on it, and many other notable figures that have been placed on currency from around the world. And I'm looking forward to that. You know, this is my 11th year bringing it to Brockton, and it's ages 7 to adults. So I've even had 90-year-old attendees coming. We do the PowerPoint presentation. We take questions. If you have like a coin or a piece of currency that you'd like for us to look at and give you somewhat of an appraisal so you know what you have and maybe the value of it, so you know if you ever want to go and sell it or pass it on, you can pass that knowledge of the value to it. So we're really looking forward to it. I take the kids and we teach them about coin grading, which is very important on the grade of a coin, meaning how much wear or tear has been put on the coin. Could, you know, the value can go from a few dollars to hundreds to thousands of dollars, depending on the grade of the coin. So we'll be teaching that to the kids. We do a free raffle. They get door prizes during this event. And I've had almost 100 people attend. Started off at the West Branch Library in Brockton.
Oh, my.
And moved up to the largest room they have at 304 Main Street, Brockton, Mass. And I'm looking forward to it. It is a lot of work, as I also do two other YN program, Young Numismatist programs up in Manchester, New Hampshire. And it's a lot of work getting these items together and two-by-twoing them with the little cardboard holder that holds the coins, because we're going to be passing out some free coins.
You get some specialized coins that you have pressed, right?
Well, no, not, you know, we've done the elongated coins this year. I've kind of held back on that because that can be an expensive thing. But we are passing out, everybody's getting the new Native American dollar coin, which used to be called the Sacagawea coin. This year has Jim Thorpe.
The Olympian.
And they're both getting, so that's $2 everybody will be getting, a Philadelphia and Denver coin.
And again, just so I could tease to folks, he does this. Even, you know, he brought me in a packet today with, you know, some of the things that are going to be given away. And I'm like, this is impressive. This is nice that you give this to the folks who attend. And I think it's up to the first 100. If it goes on beyond that, well, then you have a system to make sure that it's fair and equitable for the folks who showed up early, so to speak.
Yeah, so we highly suggest you either stop and by the Brockton Public Library, the main library at 304 Main Street. Go down towards the children's section and you can sign up for the event.
Yep.
Or you can call 508-580-7890, extension 301, and tell them you'd like to attend National Coin Week April 21st at 1 o'clock. Arrive early so you're not disrupting the talk that's going on, the presentation. So always show up early. So, but like I say, everybody makes out real well. I do have a little support. I got the Boston Numismatic Society, the Collectors Club of Boston, and the Currency Club of New England donate each $50 each to help defer some of my cost. And it's going to also be partially sponsored by the Crescent Credit Union this year.
Very nice.
Thanks to Ward 5 City Councilor Ann Beauregard, who did a lot of legwork for me to ask the bank to help out, or the credit union to help out. So kudos to Ann Beauregard from Brockton, Ward 5 City Councilor.
Indeed. And how long have you been a coin collector? What got you involved? Because there are so many different things that you can collect over the years, whether it's bottle caps, whether it's stamps, it could be comic books, it could be furniture. Everybody has that thing that they collect. What was it about coins?
Well, you know, I can't really pinpoint an exact age, but at a young age, I was given some silver dollars, Morgan dollars, and peace dollars from an uncle that owned a Gulf gas station on Memorial Drive in Cambridge, and started with that, and which was very beautiful, the Morgan and the peace dollar, and started filling albums. You know, when you get a little bit older, you're chasing after perfume and, you know, gasoline, girls. You know, cars and girls. And yep. Then I went into the Marine Corps, got to travel a little bit.
Semper Fi,
thank you. And when I got out, I was injured in the Marine Corps. And when I got out, I kind of fell back on that to started collecting again and wanting to learn more about just filling holes in an album. It was never a big history buff, but, you know, one thing leads to another. You start learning what happened in the era, whatever coin you're collecting, who made the coin. Yep. It's sparked a big interest in learning about the history. And that's what's nice about the clubs that I mentioned. They meet once a month, each one of these clubs at different times in Waltham. If you want to learn about coin collecting clubs or currency club, please show up at National Coin Week. And they do a lot of history, a lot of talks, a lot of events. So that's one thing I turned to was the American Numismatic Association to learn more. I've taken all their courses on like counterfeit detecting, grading coins, the history of coins. Wanted more, searched their web data and found some clubs in the area, and been going at that for quite a while now.
Again, our guest is a numismatist, Mr. Richard Hand Jr., as he is our guest here on Monday Night Talk. Funny, he was talking a little bit about the little booklets. I remember back in the day, local bank, depending on the bank and where you lived, I think the Brockton Savings Bank used to have, to help you learn how to save, you'd have like the little quarter books, and you'd put a quarter, and if you could, you did your chores. Your mom would give you maybe, you know, one or two quarters. You'd pop them in, and when it was filled, you'd bring it to the bank and look what I did. And, you know, they would deposit it. Who knows whatever happened to the booklets themselves, but it's definitely very cool. And when you're talking a little bit about counterfeiting, and I'm a big fan of reality TV shows. I watch stuff like Pawn Stars, and when they're looking at coins to see if somebody might have, you know, a rare coin, if they did some kind of, you know,
alterations,
or if they put a mint mark that shouldn't have been there. And it's interesting what people will do to try to make a buck by counterfeiting, or you know, making something that to look like a coin that's very valuable, but yet it's not.
And counterfeiting is as day as old as when they started making money. And it's funny, you know, counterfeiters are pretty creative. They can actually shave a mint mark, which is where the particular coin was made, off of one coin, actually glue it, or what's called embossing on like a thicker coin, the Buffalo Nickel.
Yep.
They could actually drill through the edge of the coin and insert and push up a mint mark. So, yeah, it's quite amazing. I mean, you could turn a 5-cent piece into thousands of dollars. It's worth the time and effort to do it. Altering dates, things that can be easily done if you have the time.
And people don't realize, and the other thing is being careful if you're actually handling a coin, or if you're inspecting a coin. Many times I've seen you wearing white gloves to make sure you don't get the oil from your skin on the coin and damage the coin. And also you have the little thing that you have hanging around.
Jeweler's loop, yep.
Yeah, the jeweler's loop where you can kind of look at it, inspect it to see if, in fact, it's been cleaned up or if there's been any alterations to it.
Right, that word clean is a very important word. If you have a coin collection and you have somebody to look at it, don't shine it up, don't clean it.
It loses its value.
It could really damage a lot. You know, speaking of counterfeiting, one of the biggest countries that we're having problems with is China. China,
really?
They cannot counterfeit their money. Of course, you know, the gulag for them.
No, but they can counterfeit all
our
patented stuff, yeah.
They're actually buying old mint equipment and using the same equipment. They're getting really good at counterfeiting. So obviously, if you have a very rare and very valuable coin,
you
definitely need to have it checked out. You know, you don't want to be selling a counterfeit coin because it'll come back and you'll be owing some money.
And just a reminder, the conversation we're having here with Rich is about the big event happening at the Brockton Public Library, ages 7 to 97. Yeah, we're living a little longer, so I'm kind of teasing that. But no, ages 7 to adults, this is happening on Saturday, April 21st at 1 p.m. Free raffles, door prizes, and usually everybody walks out with something. At least the first 100 people who show up and help Richard realize his dream of at least having more than 100 people. He usually has a sizable crowd, but he wants to see it to continue to grow and to spread. And if you're interested in this event, kind of give him a little early idea as to who's attending, because there's a sign up in the children's room, and you could also call 508-580-7890, extension 301. Anything we haven't mentioned or any fun facts you want to share with us before
we go?
Well, you
know, there's a grading company called Annex. They're very gracious every year to make me a special slab, which is a particular holder to hold your valuable coins or any coins in it. They make me up a nice slab that everybody gets. Littleton Coin Company, I've got a call out to them. They usually send me coin folders for everybody to pass out. I'm waiting for a call. I've actually exhausted everything that they've given me over the years, and they usually help me out. A company in California, I want to say thank you to them. They usually donate some books and some other slabs that actually have some silver coins in it. LLC Coin Company out of California. And obviously Crescent Credit Union for their support, and the Boston Numismatic Society, Collectors Club of Boston, sure. and the Currency Club of New England for the generous donation to help me fund some of this stuff, because a lot of this comes out of my pocket, and Ann Beauregard, and obviously the Brockton Public Library allowing me to do this.
So I got to throw it at you, and I thought an early conversation you and I had, I think there was a book that was going to be involved in this or something that you were going to be discussing. Could you give me details on that?
Yeah, it was a book on Christianity and the coins related to Christianity. I'm going to actually be donating that to the library. Ooh. And another book that was donated, it's on the signatures and on the back of Confederate money to know who signed the back of these. The paymasters will be donated to the library. And then we usually give out books, too, during this event, many different books. You know, One Coin is Never Enough, or the famous V nickel, the Liberty nickel from 1913, where five of them were made.
Wow.
That are worth millions of dollars, that they're all accounted for now, which is a commonly counterfeited coin. So there's many books that will be given. Most numismatists usually have a very large volume of books. The theory was buy the book before you buy the coin.
So you kind of get educated on whatever you may end up collecting.
Correct. You know, we try to, as most collectors, we usually buy the most affordable coins first, save the valuable ones for last. In reality, if you're going to get into a series of coin, you probably want to buy the most valuable coin first, because they'll hold its value and go up in value, and the common ones will stay common. But it's good to have a complete set. There's many ways of collecting, sometimes whatever appeals to you. Or what we call a type set, one of every type of coin, is a cool thing. And some series, it could be two or three different types, like the Buffalo Nickel from 1913. It was on a mound. And then shortly after that, 1913, the nickels weren't standing, so they put it on a flat plane. Mm-hmm. So there's two types there, you know, if you want a 1913 first type one, and then the other coin after that would fit into the type two variety. I'm just amazed at how interested I got with just the history aspect of it, because I'm not a wealthy man, but the knowledge is very wealthful, you know, brought a lot of wealth to me and kept me busy.
Yeah, knowledge is power.
It sure is.
Knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And also, Richard has really done his best to make sure that this isn't, you know, he's covering a lot of demographics. He does his works really hard. This is a family-friendly program, and he really does try to make sure that he's planting the seed for the younger generation, so there'll be young numismatists getting involved, young coin collectors, so they'll have a fun and safe hobby, and it'll be something that'll stay with them the rest of their lives. Is that right?
Correct. You know, and it can also lead into many job opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, we need people to photograph coins, do videos, radio shows, work for companies that are, you know, Sachs and Bowers or something that are, you know, auctioning off coins, grading companies,
coin
companies, writing books, doing research in Washington, D.C. They're always finding out new items by searching the archives of the U.S. Mint and finding out. As a matter of fact, last year was the 225th anniversary of the Mint, and if anybody was paying attention to their 1 cent pieces below the date of 2017, there was the Philadelphia Mint mark. First time ever the P for Philadelphia was placed on a 1 cent piece.
Ooh.
For the 225th anniversary of the U.S. Mint. And they only did it 1 year. If you look now, you're not going to find the P on the 218 cent. You'll find a D, meaning Denver. So
you're saying the 2017 penny, if you find with the P, it's something to kind of maybe kind of hold on to.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they made billions, but, you know, the thing would be condition. I mean, they didn't even tell us they were going to do this. U.S. Mint didn't tell us. It was
surprise.
Somebody all of a sudden, you know, this numismatist was looking at their 1 cent coins, because, like myself, I always try to look for the newest coin, you know, the newest year,
because
the dates change, and somebody noticed, like, hey, is this an error? There's a P on here. Then you'd contact the Mint. Oh, yeah, no, surprise. You know, and like with our currency, the date doesn't change every year on our currency. It's just when administration appoint new treasury secretaries, and then it takes a little while, like Steve Mnuchin. Soon we'll see the 217 date currency, but it is not there yet. I think you can buy from the Bureau of Engraving sheets of, you know, 4 notes, 20 notes, wow. 52 note sheets, you know, you could buy with his name on it right now.
My question for you, real quick, before we close out this conversation. Again, you are listening to Money I Talk. Richard Hand is my guest, a numismatist, talking about the upcoming National Coin Week celebration event in Brockton. Where do you stand on the penny and the possibility that one day the U.S. government might go do away with the penny?
The cent. We call it a cent here. Great Britain has a penny. Australia has a penny. But the cent.
Cent, penny,
you
whatever.
You know, when they start rounding up money, who really makes out on the end? Where the, you know, it might cost 2 or 3 cents to make 1 cent piece, but the thing's around for 20, 30 years. Mm. So you're getting your money's worth out of it. as a collector, I like to keeping it. I don't want to round anything up to the nearest nickel, because then the next step is nearing it to the nearest dime. Next step is nearer to the nearest quarter. That's just one man's opinion, one numismatist's opinion.
I ask because, you know, they've even, I mean, they're slowly, I mean, when was the last time you saw a keyboard that had a cent mark on it?
A keyboard?
Like for a computer.
Oh, right. You know, you use a small C, I guess.
But there's nothing that, that you have one for a dollar sign.
Right.
But you don't have one for the cent.
Probably even since with a typewriter. Was there ever even one on a typewriter?
I don't know.
Think
that's a good question.
We'll use the small C, maybe.
We'll pick this discussion up next year when we have you on to talk a little bit about your 12th event
at the
Brockton Public Library. Again, Richard Hand has been our guest talking about the big event happening on the 21st of April, Saturday, 1 p.m., Brockton Public Library, the main branch. He's no longer doing it at the West Branch. The West Branch is okay, but it's quaint. It's small. But no, he's now got the bigger room, and this is going to be a fantastic event. And you always walk away with more than just the knowledge with Richard as he's celebrating National Coin Week, the 15th to the 21st. Guest speakers, free raffles, and door prizes. Sign up at the children's room if you're interested, or call 508-580-7890, extension 31. Richard, thank you again for joining me, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Was this 41 years for this radio station?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. You guys should hopefully make your own coin.
Yeah, if we're around for that long. Anyways, you are listening to Monday Night Talk. That's all the program that we have here coming up next. Stan Blackmer and the South Shore Live gang should be in here any moment. Stay tuned for that. But hey, until next week at 6:15 p.m., that's all the program we have here. You've been listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.